I'm SP from the Starling Tribune, a show about the CW television show Arrow, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other action-packed geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to another weird episode of Play Comics, where we're just forgetting about the video game stuff and just talking to a creator about their stuff. This time, we're talking to Spencer Scott Holmes, writer and artist of Pizza Boys. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Chris. Glad to be on the show. I know I was kind of like flipping through the old podcast. I was like, you know, I got my Pizza Boys Kickstarter going. I'm like, I just want to get a bunch of extra shows. You know, I do my own show, Old Man Orange Podcast, an indie comic club. And I don't know what it is. I love guesting on shows. It's just so much fun to come on and just like see what everybody else is doing. I mean, I know we're talking about Pizza Boys on this, but I mean, like, I don't care. Like, I can go on someone's show and like, I know you do all like the video game comic book stuff. I'm like, that right there, it's up my same alley.
No, I just want to get this out of the way right up here. Your favorite part of going on other shows is the fact that you don't have to edit it, isn't it?
Isn't that the nicest part? Like, well, I think about that because I'm always the one who has to edit the shows no matter what. I mean, granted, just sometimes it just kind of just happens that you're just the one person that does it. And, you know, everybody always wants to help out, but it's kind of like, you know, I got it. But there is something so nice about that. Like, you just record and you're like, at the end, you're like, I'm done. It's not like, oh, there's going to be there too. You know, not only just editing it, then, you know, rendering it, putting it up on every single website that you need to, then sharing it. Yeah, there's all that stuff. And it's not saying that's like the hardest thing. I mean, compared to like every other multimedia aspect, that's still like the easiest. But, you know, week in, week out, when that kind of happens, you know, it does always kind of get to you, especially when like you get a buddy who's like, hey, let's do like this 6 hour long movie, you know, and then like, you know, do all this kind of stuff. And you're like, whoa, now you've just made my podcast like a 12-hour experience.
Oh, gosh, just an hour or two editing. I'm so jealous now.
Well, you go hardcore editing. I've gotten kind of like, as time has gone on, I've gotten to the point where it's like, I chop the beginnings, the ends off. If there's anything in the middle I have to take out, I do go for it. But for the most part, no. Put on, like, I already kind of have pre-ready-to-go templates, slap those together, and I'm solid. And then type in what I need to. Well, that's a challenge right there.
But we're not here to talk about dumb editing today. We're here to talk about Pizza Boys. And I want to tell you right up front, the thing that hooked me was right here on the first page of the first season, that stupid Dreamcast controller.
Did you own that one?
I still have that one, and I keep it around as punishment.
That's like one of those ones, whenever somebody has that controller, I love that. They just go, dude, I had that controller growing up. I'm like, yeah, I had that one too, because I think I needed a third controller. I think I had two regular ones, but it was the Dreamcast. So at some point, you're like, oh, I need a third one, but I don't want to pay a whole lot. I'm a kid. You know, oh, here's one for $15 brand new. This sounds great. Just the most ginormous flying saucer looking thing.
And I mean, once I saw the deeds of that and the care that went into drawing the controller that everybody hates, I knew I was going to love this.
I pulled mine out as reference and set it right there because I wanted to make sure I had it like on point for what that controller was.
Well, part of that is congratulations for doing that. And part of that is I'm sorry you still have it.
Well, I got that weird thing where it's like, video game wise, like I'd never really get rid of anything. Like I keep them all. I have the box for that controller still, I think, somewhere up there too. And just like, well, those ones just have held on to it. So it's like, you know what, that off-brand controller, you think of those ones being like not that great, but like sometimes in the long run, when you pull them out, like even I got some weird N64 ones and so on too. You pull them out like later on, you're like, they're almost kind of cool, like 20, you know, plus years later or so, like just going like, huh, look at this thing.
So where did the idea of Pizza Boys come from for you?
So what initially was is back in high school, I was actually writing like a movie script for Pizza Boys. And I wanted to do it kind of like almost like, you know, like American Pie or Van Wilder, Road Trip. It was like that kind of like time period where you had all these kind of like, you know, kind of, I guess, teen, like, college comedies and so on. And I was like, well, I could do that, but, like, kind of give it, like, sort of, like, a video game vibe. Because really, at that point, other than, like, The Wizard or something like that, you really didn't have movies that had, like, anything that had video games in it whatsoever. I mean, lo and behold, like, what came out, like, right afterwards was, like, Grandma's Boy. Even though that kind of, like, had, like, video games with, like, older guys smoking pot the whole time. So I guess it was a little bit different. But it was just that thing that's like the idea, like to have a straight up video game movie that wasn't just like, oh, here's, you know, a scene in the background of a movie. Like I always think of like you got like Charlie's Angels. And there's that one part where Drew Barrymore breaks in. There's like those two kids playing Final Fantasy VIII and they're both playing like they both got controllers in hand. It's like, what's that other kid doing? Is he not in on this? Has nobody told him how a video game works? You know, and that's like what a video game scene was back then. So I'm like, well, let's make ones where it's like, hey, here's a movie about, you know, it's a comedy, but it's like about. They're not like, in a sense, like full on, like kind of nerdy kids that be represented like back in the day, like, you know, where it's just like, we're playing video games and I'll never get girls. Like, no, we'll make it fun and funny, you know, and just kind of like a hangout flick, you know, and just have all kinds of walks of life and just video games is kind of around it. And that's what Pizza Boy sort of was. And then I never was able to really make it. I even had like tryouts and all kinds of stuff like in San Francisco for like the try to make a Pizza Boys kind of like independent movie and so on like that. And then it sort of got shelved. And then as time went on, I just kind of got farther and farther along just doing other projects of like animation and just different video things and so on. And then when I got to a point where I'm like, you know what? I want to try doing comic books. I can do that 100% by myself. I won't need anybody else. Well, if I'm going to do anything, let me try that Pizza Boy story I've always wanted to do. That's just a story about, you know, me and my friends all hanging out. Let's do that. We can do that in comic book form, right?
And I think it came out really well.
Well, thanks. It's as I said, what I like is when people talk to me is like, it felt like it captured like multiple generations. I've had people that are a little bit older and they go, dude, it was like growing up in the 80s as like a kid. And then I have people talk to me and they're like, dude, that's just like growing up in the 90s. And then some people be like, dude, that's like me growing up in the 2000s. So it's like, huh, well, that's kind of cool. I'm glad it like grabs generations. And I think, I don't know, just maybe that's just the way I've always been, is I've always been that kind of person where I play video games from like every, you know, didn't matter. There was like almost no such thing as like retro gaming back in the day. It's just you played them all. You know what I mean? Like if somebody had like an Intellivision, you just were like, dude, he's got an Intellivision. Let's go over to his house. You know what I mean? Who cares? You know what I mean? Just because the thing's a little bit older, you know, it's like that was the thing. And, you know, that was so used to. Same with like movies. Like people watch movies from like such a huge span of like timeline, like almost like didn't matter, you know, and I think kind of the nice thing about that is that once you kind of have that all kind of melded together, it really connects a lot of people.
So the characters in this book, are they all specific people in your brain, or are they kind of a mishmash of people put together?
The main four characters are like all my, one of, like my friends and myself, I guess, because I'm Vince technically. And then some of the other characters I have throughout the story are some of those kind of combo characters I have. Like either be like two or three friends I just kind of put together, or just some people I've kind of known throughout life. But for the most part, mostly everybody in there is at least somebody. Even if I draw like a background character sometimes, like I'll kind of draw like, oh, there's like that guy I've seen in town before. Or, you know, here's somebody I've met at one point, you know, just to kind of have it there. And then other times I might just draw something. But yeah, I try to make it like a real story. You know what I mean? Something. You know, mostly each one starts off as something that did happen in real life, and then I just kind of take it to the next level. You know, I turn it to 11, and then that's kind of how a Pizza Boy story kind of starts to form.
Well, that was the next question I was going to ask.
Oh. Yeah. how the stories all form?
Yeah, this is always the fun part of which of my questions are you guys going to answer before I ask it.
Bound to happen, I suppose. I think that's just kind of how it all
every
goes.
Every time. That's where the outtakes always come from.
But yeah, it's like, that's kind of the main way I go about Pizza Boys is just, you know, you get something that happens to you and then you go, well, that's kind of funny. You just kind of write it down. Sometimes it can be even small stuff too. Just something small and then like, it just starts building up. And then I just kind of think about it as time goes on. Mostly as I'm working on one issue, I'm thinking about all the other ones coming up because, you know, you can write them 10 times faster than you could draw them and so on, even faster than that, you know. And as the time goes, you just start adding and stacking and stacking and stacking or combining some stories together. And then, yeah, you got all kinds of good stuff.
Now, one of the things that I found that just really made me think back in season one was the Mario Kart getting a girl. And I see, I never thought about that when I was growing up at all. Like, is that one of the real life things, or is that something you just made up for the story?
Well, you know, back in the day, kind of like the pre, like before, like everybody sort of played video games. You know, when video games used to be sort of like, I guess you would say, like the underground sort of thing, where it was just a pocket corner of the school that kind of played it. I remember, like, no matter what, you know, you'd always have those girls would be like, oh, those guys play video games or something like that. They kind of have like that attitude towards it. But I kid you, if you pull out Mario Kart, it didn't matter who it was, you pull out any girl or something like that, they love Mario Kart. Even to this day, it's like, I've never really found someone who, like, you never find like a girl who just like hates Mario Kart. If she hates Mario Kart, she probably has some real bad experience she's not going to tell anybody about because of it. But it's just one of those ones. Just like, you throw down some Mario Kart, who doesn't want to jump in, you know?
Oh, exactly. I mean, even the worst Mario Kart is still worth playing, whichever version you think worst is.
Yeah, I was just saying, well, what would be the worst Mario Kart? Because it's like one of those ones, like, that's one of those series where, like, for the most part, they'd like, I can't think of one that's really even off.
I mean, I'd have to say technically probably just the Super Nintendo one, only because something has to be.
Yeah, and that one's just like, I don't know, because I just feel like that one's like the first one I ever played, so that's what's so legendary to me, and I can still kind of go back to it, though. It's kind of, you always forget how tough that one is, like, when you go back. Like, maybe the Game Boy one, just because you can play as easily on it. That would be, like, my way to say it. Or the Game Boy Advance one, that is.
Yeah, I think that would do it.
Because think about it. Like, try getting four of your friends today with four copies of Mario Kart Advance, four Game Boy Advances, and getting a trading cable that has the four cable splitter thing on it. So it seems like a lot of effort. You'll be pulling out Mario Kart 7 before you know it.
So which of these stories really hits home the most to you?
Probably the one that I always say is kind of like my go-to issue. If I had to give one person an issue, it'd be like, hey, here's one to start off with, is number 5, is Death of a Television. And the whole point of that one is, for anybody who's ever had a TV in their life and like treated it like it's a family member, like, your life revolves around that TV. I almost say, like, if you've seen Beavis and Butthead to America, there's like that scene where like they're growing up in front of the TV and so on. And I feel like that was like, this that thing where it's like, it's a Beavis and Butthead thing, so you kind of laugh at it, but you just kind of think, like, well, that was kind of like my life. I was like in front of the TV the whole time too, and growing up and so on. And that TV that you have there, especially like as a kid, like for me, like, I got this Mitsubishi from my buddy who, like, I had a rich friend who, like, they got, like, in 1991, they got state-of-the-art Mitsubishi, you know, TV that probably cost, like, God knows how much, like, a couple $1,000s plus, if anything like that. And they had laser discs and all the fancy stuff, where I'm over here with, like, VHSs that I've taped off TV, like, on a black and white TV. But at one point, like, the TV kind of went out, they, like, gave it to me. So it was like, they're like, here, you guys can have it. This is, you know, we're just going to get another big TV. Oh, cool. Well, whatever. 36-inch TV, even if it's got this little bit of a fuzzy picture quality to it, I don't care. That's amazing. So that thing sat at my house for, like, I don't know, probably, like, late 90s all the way on to, like, 2000. I want to say 2012 when it finally went out or whatnot. And that TV was just there. It's like, growing up, playing games on it all through high school and so on like that, watching movies, inviting people over for big movie parties and all that kind of stuff, music videos, didn't matter what it was. It all kind of revolved around that TV and how special that TV was. So I was like, when that TV kind of died, even like all my friends came by and it's just like, oh my gosh, like, I have to come see this. This is where I spent my childhood at this TV. You know, tears would come down. It'd be a sad moment and so on. And that's where, like, in that story, it's like, I want to write this because I know there's other people out there who have, like, loved the TV that much. And I know some people would laugh at that. But if you have those kind of TVs in life where it's just like, dude, that TV was so special, that TV was so magical and so on, like, so many good times happen with it, you understand. So I take it to the level of, like, hey, the TV dies and so on. But then the boys in the comic want to say, let's take it to the next one. We'll put on a public funeral for it. We'll make it like an extravagant, like, you know, festival and so on. And they go to spread the word around town, inviting everybody there. Which everybody, like, Mitch Beast, and like, oh, what is this? Like, is this some, like, Asian kid we didn't know about that passed away or something like that? Well, I don't want to not show up to this because I'm not too sure who it is, but I don't want to be the only person in town not there. And so they go to this kind of, like, funeral and not knowing exactly what they're all kind of getting into. But I feel that story right there captures a lot for a lot of people who have just, you know, grown up playing video games, watching movies, just matter, music videos, even television itself, just, you know, something like that. I mean, I know TVs are sort of expendable nowadays, but they didn't used to be.
I know, I'm just kind of dreading the day that the one in our living room goes out, because then I'm going to lose all those RCA plugs on the back of it.
Oh, gosh. And you lose, like, the S-Video plugs and all those, like, real fancy ones. Like, I had this other TV that was, like, I had a little bit past, but it was like one of those kind of back projection TVs, but not the ones that you can't see, like, unless you're sitting right in front of it, like, kind of a better model than that. And it was another one of those ones that was, like, gifted to me. Like, somebody didn't want it. The picture's kind of fuzzy. I took it apart, cleaned it out, you know, clear as day. And it was an HD TV. But this thing had, like, every plug that you would ever need for life. And, you know, it had, like, 4 AV ports, you know, like, 3, like, component ones, like, multiple S-video ones, VGA. It was just like, oh, dude, this is the best thing ever.
Oh, man, that sounds amazing.
It's just one of those, because you just can't get, like, you know, you get, like, a new TV nowadays, and it's like, you're lucky if you get, like, one component composite, like, section in there, and you're like, well, this is not enough. I have to get the old splitter out or something now.
You know, I've already got splitters plugged into splitters.
I've done that, too. There's HDMI splitters. I got one of those old-fashioned, like, pop-button splitters for, like, the AV stuff. But it's just one of those ones. Like, it's so nice when you can have a TV that's already just so ready to go. Boom, everything's there.
So one story I really wanted to ask about was number 6, where the boys get kidnapped by these 2 11-year-old girls who want to go to a convention. How?
So what that one comes from? Okay, this is one of those ones where it starts off like as a real story, and then it was just that kind of thing where we just kind of started thinking later on. But we were literally like in a Walmart, like buying movies or something like that, and we're like, my buddies are like, hey, let's go like walk down like the toy aisle, let's see what they got down there, and so on. And as we go down there, there was these 2 like 11-year-old girls who just come up to us all threatening, like with a giant plastic sword in hand, like pointing at our face, asking weird questions. She would like always ask like beforehand like what she was gonna ask, like be like question, like, you know, pronoun, whatever it was, like she would say that before and ask these strange ones. And no matter whatever answer you gave them, they just kind of had that look on their face like it was never the right answer. Whatever you said was always going to be wrong and so on. And it really kind of about stopped there. It was just like, after a while, I was like, oh, okay, we're out of here, so on. But we just kept joking, like, dude, what if those girls, like the swords, just like decide to like, they're going to like kidnap us? I mean, like, what would like, as an adult, what would you do? Like, it's 2 11-year-old girls. You couldn't say anything. You couldn't scream for help. It's like, these kids have like all the power and so on. And we kind of kept joking, like, oh, what if they wanted to go to, like, a big old convention, you know? And, like, I came up, the thing was, like, the My Bratty Kitty, just, like, combining all that kind of stuff of, like, you know, Bratz and, like, My Little Pony and, well, what was the other one? Bratz, My Little Pony, and, oh, yeah, My Kid, or Hello Kitty, like all that kind of stuff, like all the little girl things all in one. And it's like they want to go there and they can't get there on their own. But if they try to, in a sense, kidnap 2 boys or 2 anybody, really, they're just looking to happen to walk into that trap there, they can maybe get their way, you know, bully their way to Vegas. And then I just thought, I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna go with it and just make it go all dark and so on as the thing goes on, like make it kind of like a horror movie partially. So, you know, you're starting off in this comedy, and as the thing goes on, it starts to get like scarier as the night goes on.
Oh, well, I'm glad nobody actually tried to kidnap you, because that would be just totally freaky in all the worst ways.
Yeah, it would be one of those ones we'd be like, oh my gosh. But think about it, like literally, like kids could have that ultimate power of kidnapping if they really want to, if they really thought about it. Especially this day and age, it's like children have like almost like more power and rights than like than probably they know of, but it's there. And I just thought that would just be kind of funny to sort of like exploit and so on. And for future episodes, I'm actually going to bring those 2 girls back for bring them back for their special cameo at some point, because I thought they were kind of funny just in their own way. Because you know how sometimes it is when like you talk to like children and so on, and like you're like telling them like, hey, there's this cool thing, like, you know, like podcasts. Like I've always, you know, when I told people like, oh, I do a podcast, you tell a 10-year-old kid that you do a podcast, they look at you like, that's stupid. Why would you want to do a podcast? Who would want to listen to you talk? And you're like, well, thanks, you know, Mr. 10-year-old boy who thinks he knows everything.
I mean, gosh, I have tens of people listening.
Yeah, why don't you get back to animating and make me more cartoons so I can watch? But that takes time and effort. I don't care. Start doing it. I'm 10 years old. I need something. So yeah, these 10-year-old kids with attitudes, huh?
So speaking of time and effort, what was it really that made you want to write this and do the artwork as opposed to getting somebody else to do the artwork?
What I did, like, I got to the point because I was doing animation for a while, and I'm one of those kind of people, like, I came to drawing sort of late in life. Like, you know, I mean, granted, I think everybody draws from time to time throughout school, and, you know, maybe you have a class here and there or something like that, but I really was never, like the drawing artist type person. I was always someone, like, I wrote scripts, I made movies, I played music and so on like that, but me and my buddy got into animation after doing movies for a long time because it just got to the point where it's like, dude, no, it's like so hard to get people all together. You know what I mean? Try to just get like even just like five people to go shoot a movie. It's just like next impossible at some point. But we're like, well, let's try animation. I mean, the only thing we have to do is put time and effort into it. And if it's animation, like the drawings don't have to look that good because it's almost like the motion will make up for it. Kind of all a South Park style. And doing that for like a while, I just kind of got more and more into drawing. I just kept drawing, getting better. I just went and got a bunch of books and learned as much as I could kind of from them and so on. Just you go on Amazon, like what's used and oh, okay, that's a fair price. Yeah, let's get that. And then after a while, I was like, you know what? I think I could almost draw just good enough to do a comic book, you know? And then the upside too is I kind of wanted a project that was just by myself and just mainly for the fact that like, I never have to worry about ever like going like asking somebody to help out or anything like that. Just like it's all my own time, you know, like however long it takes, like I can just do it. But it's never like I'm going to go halfway into it and somebody's be like, oh, I can't do this anymore. You know what I mean? The only person who can fail me is myself, you know, and once I fail myself, I guess I'm 100% done with everything anyways. So that was how I got kind of into doing the comic books. And then as you kind of like you can probably see it because you see the whole span of the books right now. You see like the first issue. You know, just like I take my art from that one and then you go to like number 8 and even just in that time period, it's like, oh, I just continuously kind of progress. But that's somebody who really didn't start drawing till like in their 20s.
And it gives me a lot of hope there that you say that because I write like a drunk 3-year-old and I don't draw much better.
Well, that's all you need to do. That's a start to anything. Like, you know what I mean? It's just about like putting in, you know, just putting that hours in, you know, no different than even podcasting. I remember even like the first time doing podcasts, like you don't think much of it, but you kind of get into it. And then you're like, hey, everybody, we're on a show. Let's see how we're going to fill up this like 20 minutes or something like that. Because, you know, they'd be really short back in the day because you'd run out of time unless you've had something to really talk about. And then, you know, as it goes on, you get better and better and, you know, it just kind of works that way. And that's sort of how drawing was. It's just like, I just kind of kept doing it. And I was nothing special, you know, and I just got to a point where I finally felt like, you know what? I look at something like Charlie Brown or Peanuts or something like that. And I was like, as long as I can be kind of in about like a similar ballpark as that, like that sort of works. Or like the other book is like, did you ever read Scott Pilgrim?
I didn't. And at this point, I think I'm just waiting until I get to it for the podcast.
Yeah, by this point here, and that's one of those books too. It's like, because that was such a special book to find like back in 2000s, you know, it's just that one where it's just like, oh my gosh. But the other thing about it was the fact that like, and I'm not saying like the art's like bad, but you look at the art and it's like, it's not like looking at Jim Lee or Greg Capullo where you just kind of go, why bother? What's the point? Never going to be that good. Might as well just go on doing something else. You know, you looked at like Scott Pilgrim and it was kind of like, you know what? This is possible. You can do this. You can have a sweet story and you don't have to have just that super dialed in artwork where Batman's got, you know, his boots are just, you know, looking better than like a real boot in real life and so on. You know what I mean? They're just so dialed in. It's like, no, it could be kind of cartoony and kind of goofy looking and simple. And the lines don't have to be straight, you know, and, you know, things can even cross in weird ways. And it all works. It's like what makes to me, I think what makes comic books so nice is there's nothing really wrong you can do as long as somebody can understand your story. That's the only thing that matters. The only thing wrong you can do is make your story so confusing that nobody has any idea what's going on. And even that, I guess, might be a style in itself.
Yeah, and yours is really easy to follow here. Like, even though I don't know the people you're talking about specifically that you're basing the characters on, I had friends like all these people. So it's really easy for me to think, oh, you know, there's my friend Steve. There's my friend Adam. You know, there's all these people I grew up with.
Well, and that was one of the things too, is I try to make it kind of have that feeling like, you know what? I feel like everybody's got that kind of group of friends and so on. And you can almost sort of like archetype your own friends in a way that like, I feel kind of fit. And it's like, okay, this right here, like here's just different relatable characters. And it's got like a nice mismatch and so on. And then I also do it, since I do it kind of a sitcom style as a kid, that was the other thing too, is I used to watch a bunch of sitcoms like in the 90s and so on and 2000s. And it's just like, I always kind of wanted to write sitcoms. And I was like, well, I'm just going to do it sitcom style so that it's not like, you know how so many like comic books are nowadays where it's like people get like intimidated because they're like, well, it's on, you know, issue 122. Like, that's a lot of catching up to do. I don't know. It's like, I just kind of want to make mine like, no, you can kind of jump in anywhere. You know, it's, you know, if you grab issue 7, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's going to be some stuff that might connect from the previous ones, but they're all their own kind of individual stories. You know, they're episodic. Boom. Doesn't matter. Anyone will work, and it's easy to kind of get into.
So in the following section, we're talking about the Pizza Boys Kickstarter, which sucks a little bit, or really a lot, because I got the timeline for everything all screwed up in my head, and the Kickstarter is... The good news is that you can still go and buy the books. You just can't do it. The Kickstarter. So, again, I'm really sorry for that. I'm dumb. This Prime year is always crazy. Dumb. And mostly, I was just... So, you've got a Kickstarter going for season 2 right now. How has that been going for you?
That's been going kind of good because, like, my goal was kind of to go with... Okay, I'm gonna do a Kickstarter for pretty much like the print versions of like the books. And then like a Kickstarter where it's like, oh, I need money to make this comic book that I haven't made yet. I mean, technically, I had all the issues done, and now I was just putting together the graphic novel. And as the Kickstarter's going, I've already pretty much have the graphic novel about ready. I'm just waiting a moment. The print's kind of going. And I just wanted to do it kind of as like a fun sort of like, in a sense, like a promotional way to kind of be like, hey, we're having a launch party. Here's the book. We're going to make it kind of seem big and special. I'm going to use Kickstarter. I haven't used it since like I was in a band like 10 years ago. So it's like, well, we'll go back and try Kickstarter. See what that's like. You know, a lot of the other indie comic guys out there, they always kind of tell me, they're like, you know, the Kickstarter theme seems to work pretty well for us. I'm like, oh, okay. I'll give it a go. The one thing that for me is like, there was Comic Central, which was kind of like the main indie like hub for a while for getting digital comics and so on. And last 3 years, like me and a bunch of other people, like, you know, we use that one so exclusively that it closed October 31st. Such a bummer. Cause it took like a big old, like, boom, there's like not really a nice place for indie comics really at the moment, because yeah, you can have them on Amazon and you can have them on Comixology, but that's like literally taking your comic is like a rock and thrown into like the Pacific Ocean and being like, huh, well, I just kind of sank down to the bottom. Oh, look, there's the Image Comics. There's the Batman Comics. There's the, you know, the Marvel. There's the Dark Horse, and mine's lost. You know, it's gone now. So this big kind of like indie section that there was just disappeared. And it's like, oh, now everybody's kind of like spreading out and stuff. So it's like, I guess Kickstarter is definitely the place I'm going to have to go at the moment, you know, and see how that all pans out.
So how is it fighting against the big boys to get people to read your stuff?
You know, it's not too bad. I mean, granted, it's like everything in life. You know, you are hustling your kind of work and so on. And no matter what, it's like, I've just learned this. It doesn't matter what it is. If you're doing music, if you're doing movies, at first, nobody wants to see your stuff. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's just like human nature to like not want to be like... Like, you know, you know when you want to show somebody something, you're like, dude, check this out. So I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it. They're like, I don't know why that always kind of is. But, you know, as long as you kind of persevere and you keep kind of like coming at them and be like, hey, here, check this out. You know, you can kind of get people to get it. And once they sit down, that's always the key thing. You get them to sit down. They'll be like, oh, no, I really dig this and so on. Start spreading the word. Like, I do really well at the Comic Cons. Like, I haven't done like tons of them. But like the ones I've always done just like every, you know, once in a while here and there. It's just always you have to kind of like pre-plan for so long. But, you know, you can go out there and then I can really talk to people. And if I can talk to somebody, then I can kind of weave them on in like a used car salesman, like Kurt Russell in Used Cars, you know, and get them to buy books, you know, and come on in. And it's always kind of funny because you hear people that say that you're at a Comic-Con and you go like, yeah, so you like comics? They're like, no, I don't like comics. My girlfriend dragged me here. It's like, you're here at a Comic-Con, you don't like comics? Well, okay, whatever. You like sitcoms? Oh, I kind of like sitcoms. Well, come on over then. Let me show you what we got in this book here. And, I don't think it's like, you know, people always want to say you're fighting against like the big companies like Image and Dark Horse and like DC and Marvel. I don't really necessarily think so nearly as much. I mean, when it comes to space on like Comixology and so on, like, yeah. And I guess like if you're at a comic book store and you're trying to like, because there's some people that just don't like indie comics. So they like, they, you know, I've always heard some like people have a hard time getting their book like just in like their local comic book shop because they just don't want to put an indie comic up. But I always kind of feel like people that read comics are kind of all in about the same boat, because there's just not very many people out there that read comics. I always say if you went on the street and you like asked 100 people if they legitimately read comics, not like they've had a couple throughout life or they read one book here or there. Like, no, like they kind of read them on the regular. I bet you there's only like 1 out of 100 people that actually truly reads comics. So as long as you find that person, they're most likely, even if they're in the, you know, Batman and, you know, Marvel type stuff and Spider-Man and all that stuff, just like real hardcore. They probably aren't like, they probably wouldn't have a problem going like, oh, I'll check out an indie comic, you know what I mean? Or I check out like, you know, even the other companies or comics that aren't even superheroes and so on. I feel like you're just either into comics or you're not really into comics. That's kind of how it is.
Obviously, if people want to get a hold of season 2 of Pizza Boys, they can head on over to Kickstarter and do that. But if people want to get a hold of season 1, how can they pull that one off?
On Kickstarter as well, I got like a pack that's got both. If you want to jump on in, you're like, hey, I've never read Pizza Boys in my entire life. I got both a digital set that's got both Pizza Boys 1 and 2, or Seasons 1 and 2, and then I got a physical set that's got both the books, ship them right to you and so on. And then I also got a couple little belts. I wanted to have some fancy novelty items to go with, but just because it's like Kickstarter, I wasn't going to go super out of my way, you know, and have like, oh, there's this ridiculous stuff for $500. I'll draw you in, you know, every single issue for the end of time, or, you know, whatever people like to do. But I was like, no, I found the best novelty item I could have for my book, Pizza Boys. And I got custom pizza cutters that have bottle openers on like the handles. And it's like on one side, it's got the Pizza Boys heads printed on it. And the other side, it says Pizza Boys on it. And like, they're kind of red and black. And I was like, there's my novelty item to go with it. You know what I mean? Because that's an item that you could sell at a Comic-Con to somebody. Even if they didn't buy your book, I bet you could still sell some people like, hey, here's a pizza cutter. You know what I mean? And it's got a bottle opener on it, and it's got my characters on it. Isn't that pretty sweet?
That is easily one of the coolest extra little novelty things I've seen on Kickstarter in a long time.
Well, it just feels like everybody's got like, you know, everybody's got wall prints and so on like that. It's kind of like, those are kind of ones like, yeah. I mean, like, you know, art's cool. And like for my book too, it's like, I'm not really selling my art. Like, is that like, I mean, I guess you could have a wall print and so on, but like, you know, I think a lot of times people get those kind of like wall prints or like, just even like this, like the little posters. And most of the time I feel like those just probably go in a drawer, or they just go in a box and they almost kind of don't really see the light of the day, you know, or kind of the same thing with sometimes stickers and so on too. I mean, I guess if you got a place to put them, like a guitar case or something like that, yeah, that can kind of work. But it's like, I just want something that wasn't those, you know, or even like t-shirts, because then like t-shirts is always kind of like a hassle. Like, I think print on demand is kind of the better way to go. So you're not ordering like, you know, a copious amount of t-shirts, and then you just got boxes of t-shirts sitting in your house and all different types of sizes that you have to kind of like shift around and so on. It was like, let's just make it simple. You know what I mean? Keep it easy.
I mean, who doesn't drink and eat pizza too? It fits your audience perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, I just feel like, as well as ones, like, and it works. And even if it's like, even if you didn't drink, you could still like open up a Coke bottle with it. You know what I mean? Like, you never know. You never know when you're gonna be at the next taco stand. Better have that pizza cutter ready.
I can't tell you how many times I've been out to like a work function or something, and we had a bottle opener with them. It just ruined the entire thing. Did.
That's when you need somebody to have, like, I always call it Brad Pitting it. I know it's like the weirdest way to describe it, but if you've ever seen the movie California, Brad Pitt takes the beer bottle and he puts it up against the side of the counter and just slams it down and pops it off. I've never done that because I'm assuming I'll just shatter that everywhere, and it's just not worth that. Not worth that shame and pain that might come with that. But if somebody can Brad Pitt it, then that's pretty amazing.
I really want to see somebody do that now.
Did you go see that movie California? Have you ever seen that movie California spelled with a K?
I have it. But that's cheating. I want to see somebody do it in real life.
Yeah, that's true. It's not the same. But you guys see Brad Pitt do it as like scary hillbilly Brad Pitt. So it's that's almost worth it in itself.
And finally, if you guys has kind of a comic idea in their head, what kind of advice would you give them to get it going?
The key thing I always tell anybody kind of like is just literally sit down and do it. Cause you know, so many people, I think they got these great ideas and it's just like the thing that's always missing is kind of going from point A to point B and finishing it, you know? And if you can just kind of get up every single day and be like, oh, hey, even if I'm only gonna put a half an hour in, I'm going to continuously at least put it together. I'm going to take my idea. I'm going to start writing it. I'm going to write it on my ideas. Once I have all my ideas ready, I'm going to start writing my script. Once I kind of got my script going, I'm going to start drawing it. Or if need be, I'll find somebody. I'll find a friend, or you know, you can hire people. The other thing that's the very common thing people do nowadays, you can hire somebody from out of country for next to nothing, you know. So you can find somebody in South America or the Philippines, and they can draw your comic book for like $300 to $500 or something like that. So if that's the case, yeah, you got those choices out there, but just continuously double day towards what you want to do. Because that's how it just kind of stacks up. You know, it's easy to kind of go like, oh, you know, I'll get to it this like weekend or something like that. And you think about your idea and you kind of like sort of like half-ass kind of get going, but it's not really getting anywhere. It's like the key, I think the best thing to do is just, if you keep doing a little bit every single day, you get more and more into it. You get more and more motivated about it. Then you start looking really forward to it. You'll like wake up and be like, dude, I can't wait to work on my project. And at least it's making progress. At least it's kind of getting somewhere. And like the nice thing about a comic book is I think what I've just kind of learned from just doing all kinds of other multimedia things, that's like the cheapest one you can possibly have. Because really, like, you just need a computer, but you don't need a ridiculous computer. You don't need that same computer that you need for video editing. You don't need that same computer that you might need for animation. You know, really, probably almost even a normal computer will do just fine. You get yourself, you know, some type of drawing tablet, whether you want to, you know, draw on, you know, the screen or draw like off the screen. Like I use kind of one of those old fashioned ones where you have to like look at the screen and then your hand, everything. And that sort of works, you know, or I mean, I guess you could technically scan it in. It's like, but none of this stuff really costs a whole lot of money. That's kind of the nice thing about it. So there's not really too much of an excuse to like why you can't, you know, kind of get a comic book going. And especially nowadays too, it's like with the digital market too. I mean, even if you never even printed them out, it's just like so easy to kind of get it out there and at least put it in somebody's hand. You know what I mean? Because, you know, somebody will go out and buy it, especially if you talk highly about it and you spread the word, you know, and you get it around. Because, I mean, really, that's the second half of the job always is, you know, 50% of it's making the comic book, 50% of it's advertising it. But just continuously do it. I think that's the key thing is just take it, do it. I always like, if somebody's got a great idea, I tell them, you can do it. Go do it. Go do it right now. Like, don't stop. Don't let anybody tell you you can't do it and so on. I think of some of the best advice ever is like, I don't know if you ever saw like that in like the 80s, there's that Kiss. It's like one of those like Kiss VHSs. I just remember like my buddy's dad had and so on. And there's a part in it where like Paul Stanley's kind of talking about like he's motivational advice. And he's like, I'm going to tell you, you can do it. Because here's the thing. I was able to do it. The people that tell you you can't do it are people that have failed or have given up. And that's why they tell you you can't do it. But since I know that I made it, I'm telling you, you can make it too. And I always look at that. It's like, that's advice right there. Just continuously, you know, go forward. You know, you don't always have to be the best. You don't always have to be the greatest. As long as you're making something, as long as you're doing what you want to do, and as long as you're kind of doing something that at least in your mind you can tell is like, I've never really seen this before, you're on to the right track.
But now you've got me all motivated to go get something done for myself too. Just need to see if I can get those ideas to pop out of my head.
I'm a good motivator. If there's one thing I can do well, it's like, I can do that. Like, I don't know. It's like, but to me, it's like, I want to see people, like, kind of succeed. Get those ideas, just write them down. Every single time you got an idea, like, write it down. Just, like, have a notepad with you everywhere you go. I mean, you can also do it on your phone nowadays, too. But, like, you got an idea, like, that's what I do. It's like, if something funny comes up, I write it down. Something kind of weird comes up, I write it down. You know, and you don't know where sometimes these ideas will come up, but, you know, maybe 6 months, maybe even 6 years later, you might find a use for that idea. And you're never really too sure.
It's been great talking to you about all this. If people want to find you for things other than Pizza Boys, where else can they find you around the internet?
The easiest way is just to go to www.oldmanorange.com. I mean, that's the place where it's like, not only is there links to Pizza Boys and all that stuff, it's got my podcast, Old Man Orange Podcast, my Indie Comics Club podcast, got links to even like the old videos and animations we've done throughout the years, music, so on. And then that can even lead into Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of fun stuff. Beyond that, mostly the only one I really use as far as social media really goes is like Twitter. Twitter is kind of my main one, and I'm at Spencer S. Holmes on Twitter. I mean, I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as well. And if you just type Pizza Boys, that's Pizza Boys with a Z, you'll find any of that stuff. But Twitter's kind of my main go. And then the website's kind of like the catch-all for everything.
And of course, we'll have links to all that down in the show notes. But Until next time, when we catch another creator with their stuff, be ready for some more regular episodes.